Thank you for joining me for this series of podcasts, How to Open Your Own Profitable Real Estate Agency. My name is Gary Pittard, CEO of Pittard. We're real estate agency profit consultants. How to Open Your Own Profitable Real Estate Agency is in five parts. In addition to the audio programs, you should have also downloaded a comprehensive manual that's available in the same section of the Pittard website where you downloaded the audio files. I recommend listening to the audio in conjunction with the manual. I also recommend that you take plenty of notes and review your notes and manual, because if you're going to open your own real estate agency, and of course if you want it to be profitable, then there's a lot of things that you have to get right. Under free podcasts in the management section of the Pittard website, pittard.com.au/management, you'll also find a case study, which is an interview with an agency leader who opened from scratch. This will give you plenty of good information on how to open an agency and how to operate one profitably. My company consults to some of the most profitable agencies in Australia and New Zealand. We're also working in Southeast Asia. One thing that's common across all countries in which we work is that agents who know the essential elements of profit have successful businesses. The remainder struggle. Many mistakenly believe that because they're good salespeople, this automatically means that they'll also be good business people. You should be very wary of this type of thinking. Leadership, management, and sales are entirely different skills. Getting listings and making sales is different to leading people and bringing out the best in them. And both are different to managing people, designing systems, and ensuring that the infrastructure for implementing business plans is in place. Don't get me wrong, being a good salesperson is a good start. It's essential almost. But you require much more than that if you're going to be profitable. In the early days, your profit will be mostly generated by you. In the early days, you won't have a business, despite the fact that you're working for yourself. If your business, and I put that in inverted commas, relies on your production for survival, you don't have a business, you have a job. So over time, your goal must be to build a team of winners. When you no longer have to list and sell in order for your business to survive, then and only then will you have a true business. This program will set you off on the right start to opening a profitable business, but I stress that it is indeed only a start. All of the business systems that you need to build a profitable agency are explained in Pittard's four-day management seminar, The Agency Profit System. In this program, How to Open Your Own Profitable Real Estate Agency, I will give you what I can to get you started, but I strongly urge you to inspect the agency profit system before you open. It will prevent you from making a lot of expensive mistakes. So let's get started, shall we? Please open your manual at page one. If you're thinking about opening or acquiring a real estate business, no doubt you're feeling both excitement and trepidation. On the one hand, you want the freedom and you want the lifestyle that a good business can give you. On the other hand, you'd be rightly concerned about your chances of success. Now, this is only natural, but I also think it's quite healthy too. You'll need to work hard and you'll need excitement and passion and expertise and a good grasp of reality if you are going to make this venture a success. But if you go about it the right way, you will build a successful business. Go about it the wrong way, as many people do, and you may become a slave to an ailing business, making your life much more difficult. Let's look on page two now at the primary reason for having your own business. And the primary reason for having your own real estate business is to improve your life. Now, this might seem obvious, but I've got to say that 90% of business owners do not achieve this. Now, I don't want to make this program a negative one, but I've been working in real estate businesses, visiting real estate businesses, consulting to real estate businesses since 1993. And it's interesting that I go into real estate offices and what I was hearing back in 1993, the same kind of complaints that leaders were making then, the same problems and challenges that they were facing back in 1993, they're exactly the same in the 21st century. The only thing that's changed is the century. The complaints don't. And all of this stems from a lack of business systems. So you would expect that people go into a real estate business and they know what needs to be done. It's like I said to you in the introduction, that a lot of salespeople think that because they're good salespeople, automatically that makes them good business people. But, you know, we have to go into our business with our eyes wide open. And if we're going to make this business a success, we need to have systems in place. We need to learn how to lead. We need to learn how to hire. We need hiring systems. We need business systems. We need marketing systems. And when you start your business, you're going to need as many of these systems as quickly as you possibly can to get the business off to a flying start. So it's good to go into your business feeling optimistic and about its chances of success. I think you really need that. It's a good characteristic, but it must be balanced with realism. The rewards of building a great business can be high, but there is a price to be paid. And also on page two, you'll see the price of business. And this goes beyond the cost of purchasing the business or the cost of setting the business up. There is a personal price that you have to pay. And look, we say this when we set goals, don't we? That goals require us to decide what we're willing to pay in order to achieve the goals. Because in order to achieve goals, we have to give things up sometimes. We have to give up sometimes bad habits. We have to sometimes part company with people who really are just dragging us, pulling us back. We have a monetary price sometimes. You know, we have to spend money on training ourselves. And we have a personal price as well. You know, the price that our families pay when we're working harder. Now, this isn't bad. This is just necessary. Success demands a price. So the personal price that you have to pay is certainly going to be hard work. There's stress. You're going to have to forego some family events. That's just to name a few. It's not a matter of operating and then regularly just emptying the cash register. You know, you have to work to get the money in the door. You have to work to hold on to some money for profit. You have to get your expenses under control. And I tell you what, and you'll find this as an employer. Anybody can just walk up to you and say, "Sorry, boss, I quit. I've had enough. I don't like it here." But I tell you what, you can't quit. Not easily anyway. So you'll be lonely, you'll be frustrated sometimes, you'll be elated, you'll be overjoyed sometimes as well. But just be prepared for this, because business is not easy. And if it was, everybody would be in business for themselves, wouldn't they? Remember that business is not like the field of dreams. If you build it, they will come. Opening is the easy part, but staying open and thriving require a lot of thought, it requires a lot of planning, and it requires a lot of work. Business is not for everybody. It can exact a high price on you and your family. Be sure you have the temperament for it, the support of your family, and be sure that you're willing to learn all you need to learn in order to build a great business. Let's look at defining success on page three. Successful businesses give their owners five rewards. An improvement in your life is number one. Now, why would you open a business if not to make your life better? Now, the second is independence. You work for your own goals. Right or wrong, you make all the decisions. Your company's success or failure is your responsibility. Now, this is important. We are the leaders of our businesses. We take responsibility for our businesses. Let me say this to you, and I don't mean to be harsh, but losers blame the market. And I hear this all the time in real estate. Oh, the market's tough. Or the market's booming, or the market's going sideways, or buyers are fussy. You know, people blame their customers, they blame the market. You need to learn, if you're going to open a business, you need to learn to survive and then to thrive in any market. Because if you stay in business long enough, and I sincerely hope you do, you're going to meet all different sorts of markets. When I first started Profit Consulting back in 1993, we were in a recession, or we'd just come out of a recession. And since then, I've seen booms, I've seen busts, I've seen global financial crises, and anybody that's been in real estate for 20 years has seen every market there ever is. Now, why do some people do well regardless of the market? The reason is they do well because they're doing the right things. So please never blame the market. Your success or the failure of your business is your responsibility. Next is pride. You're proud of your business, its reputation, your team and your accomplishments and your culture. And a good business is really something that you can be proud of. Financial rewards. You want to work to a stage where you have no more money worries. Profits from a successful business can far exceed what you could ever earn as an employee. And you also want freedom of choice. And freedom of choice we define as being a state where you're working in your business only because you want to, not because you have to. And don't let anybody tell you that you cannot get a real estate business to run to a point and to a level where it gives the owner of that business freedom of choice. So if you think this can't be done, we'd be happy to introduce you to many leaders who have achieved freedom of choice. Look, the thing that you have to do is you have to get intensely interested in business and in particular, you have to get intensely interested in your business. I treat my business like a hobby. I don't have any trouble working in my business. I don't have any trouble working on my business because I love it. I love my team. I love the work that I do. I love my clients. You know, I just get a great pleasure from my business. And the day you don't get pleasure from your business, that's the day you should sell up. So you need to be intensely interested in your business. You might not be much of a reader now. You need to read books. You need to read business books. You need to read biographies of successful people. You need to study business. You need to study leadership. And you probably studied sales in order to get to the level where you're at now, where you think, well, right now I've made enough money, I'm going to go and open my own business. So if you learned how to sell, you also need to learn about business. You need to learn how to lead. You need to learn how to manage. So be intensely interested in your business. On page 4, let's define failure. Now, continuing to trade is not a definition of success. There are many businesses that manage to keep the doors open while enslaving the owner and showing little profit. These businesses are failures. A business that requires its owner's efforts to survive is not a business, it's a job, and often a low-paying one at that. If your business requires your constant presence to survive, no matter how much money you make from it, it's a failure. Then another thing to think about is taking the right advice. You can't have a successful business unless you take advice. And the thing is, though, there's always a lot of people that are willing to give you advice. But the thing you need to consider is which advice is the right advice. I mean, you want to make sure that you follow a roadmap that goes to a destination where you want to go. You wouldn't want to follow a roadmap that took you somewhere where you didn't want to go, would you? And likewise, if you take advice from people who, although they appear successful, underneath aren't really successful, you take advice from people like that, you'll get what they got. You'll get the results that they got. And so when you take advice, you need to make sure that it's people that are leading the kind of life you want to lead. And I mean true successes. I mean, would you want to take advice from somebody who made a lot of money, but their family hated them? Do you call that successful? To me, I want to take advice from people that have a life that I would be happy to live, and that is a really good family life, and also a business with a great team, a great culture, making a high level of profit. And those are the kinds of people that I take advice from. You see, appearance is often not reality. Many agents use systems that are typical to the real estate industry, but despite being widespread, many of these systems are not profitable. The typical real estate business does not make large profits from its sales department, and that's why so many real estate businesses rely for survival on their rent rolls. So before you take advice from any real estate agent, be sure that they're qualified to offer such advice. They should be making high profits, ask to see their profit and loss statement, and they should have happy clients, and I believe they should have a good, happy family life as well. So always listen to people who earn high profits and can show evidence of large numbers of happy clients. On page 5 of your manual, we talk about simplicity. It's one of the greatest secrets to success in business. You see, the intricacies of every business, every industry, can be reduced to a simple formula. And real estate's formula is amazingly simple, but to many agents, it's incredibly hard to practice. There are many temptations that deviate from simplicity. There are many distractions as well. The real estate three-step formula for making sales is 1, find sellers, 2, find buyers, and 3, match them up. And real estate is that simple. You tell me any area in the world where real estate agents operate where real estate is not that simple. Find sellers, find buyers, match them up. Now, much accompanies this formula, I'll agree, but there are these 3 steps that must be practiced daily to generate sales and income. There's also a formula for real estate management: create income, control expenses, and make profit. Now, a lot of our industry seems to be so focused on creating income that it forgets about controlling its expenses, and therefore it makes very, very little profit. And again, much accompanies this formula, but these 3 steps must be practiced daily if you're going to survive and thrive in business. On page 6, let's look at the purpose of business. And I'll put it bluntly, the purpose of a business is to make a profit. Without profit, the business will not survive. You can talk to me about how you do wonderful things for the community, how you look after your team, how you sponsor local sporting groups. You can talk to me about how you participate in fundraising events. All of these things are very, very nice and they're good things to do. But if the business doesn't survive, no other goals can be accomplished. So you can talk about people, clients, systems, community, sponsorship. All of these things are meaningless if the business doesn't exist. So the welfare of the business is the most important priority. Too often profit is regarded with shame and embarrassment. One measure of the honesty, competence, and quality of a business is the measure of its long-term profit levels. You've got to make a profit. Let's look now at the seven features of a real estate agency. One is an office. You've got an office that has a license to trade. This is your primary place of business. Two, salespeople. The major purpose of salespeople is to find and list properties for sale by selling your agency's service to property owners. Once listed, salespeople must then sell their listings. Three is listings. And when I talk listings, I mean exclusive listings, of course. Your salespeople find property owners who wish to sell properties in your area. These property sellers are persuaded to choose only your agency to find a buyer for their property. You must obtain many listings. You can't sell properties if you don't have them listed. Four, buyers for your listings. Using cost-effective marketing methods, that's smart marketing. And I'll talk to you a lot about marketing later. You know, a lot of people don't use smart marketing. In fact, they spend an awful lot of money to generate one sale. But by using cost-effective marketing methods, that's smart marketing, you bring your listings to the attention of buyers. Now, most real estate marketing is done through signs, online advertising, and social media. And there are many, many pitfalls to watch. And if you're not careful, your advertising spend can quickly get out of control. Five is payment for your services. Now, when a buyer signs a contract to purchase and that purchase is complete, your agency's paid a selling fee. Your salespeople must be trained to obtain the full fee without ever resorting to discounting. Six, income and expenses. Your major income source of income will be selling fees from property sales. You'll need to be careful with your expenses to make sure you don't spend more than you receive. This might sound obvious, but many real estate businesses go broke because they spend more than they earn. And then, of course, seven is profit. And this is your aim. Your aim is to make a profit. Keep your break-even point as low as possible and avoid leases and other debt and fixed costs. Guard your profit margin. These seven features describe exactly how a real estate agency operates in all areas. Now, before we go too much further talking about how to open your own profitable real estate agency, I hope you won't mind if just for a little while I talk to you on page 8 about ethics. Now, perhaps you're a salesperson, you're leaving the agency where you are now, and you're going to open up your own business, and this is a good thing to do. But I just want to mention this, when a salesperson leaves one agency to join another, or to open their own agency, taking leads from a former employer is stealing. Now, you can justify this how you may, but there's no way to sugarcoat this. If your former employer has done the right thing by you, is there really any reason why you'd want to open in competition with her or him? Now, whether you have a restraint of trade clause is irrelevant. Ask yourself, how would you feel if one of your salespeople opened in competition to you, or even worse, stole leads from you? If you wouldn't like it, please don't do this to anybody else. You can't switch ethical behaviour on and off. You're either ethical or you're not. You can build a successful business without resorting to such behaviour, so when you leave, do so under the right circumstances. Do the right thing, leave all leads behind, and don't open in competition with a former employer. When you open your own real estate business, one of the earliest decisions you're going to have to make is what are you going to call it? And this will lead to thought about whether you join a franchise, a marketing group, or whether you become an independent agency. Now, whether you purchase an existing agency or whether you open from scratch, you're going to need to decide on a name. An important decision is whether you want to join a franchise, a marketing group, or open as an independent. Now, being perceived as big and a sense of belonging is one reason why people opt to join a marketing group or a franchise. Now, being perceived as big and satisfying the human desire to belong are underlying reasons why many real estate agency owners are attracted to franchises and marketing groups. Now, many agencies, however, feel that Pittard satisfies these needs through its leaders circle. And Pittard works with many successful agents, independent agents, some are in franchise groups, some are in marketing groups as well. Many of our clients remain fiercely independent and don't see the need to join a franchise or a marketing group. And we'd be happy to discuss these options with you and put you in touch with agency leaders for more advice. Now, in the course of our work as profit consultants over the past 25 years, we've seen franchised offices, marketing group offices, and independent offices go broke. We've also seen many thrive, trading successfully for decades. So what makes the difference between success and failure? Is it the name? And I've got to say here, definitely it's not. The difference between going broke and profiting over the long term is the calibre of the person who owns the business. All successful businesses need competent leadership. What these competent business leaders choose to call their businesses makes very little difference, in my opinion. When you join a marketing group or a franchise, effectively you're leasing a name. And this is a name that you don't own. It's a name over which you have no control. And the big problem with leasing a name is that there are so many available, and they all claim to be better than each other. In fact, there are so many that they've all lost their uniqueness in the marketplace. Can you really see much difference between any of these so-called big brands? All claim to be different, bigger, offering better branding. But honestly, what does one offer that another doesn't? Whether marketing group or franchise, we do not see much difference between one or another. Is being part of a large group really that important to your typical real estate homeowner or buyer? We've seen no evidence that it is important to them. Buyers will go where the listings are. Homeowners will go where the skill is. They will list with the real estate agent whom they feel will get them the highest price. So skill is far more important than the name you choose to put over your door. And speaking of skill, it takes management and leadership skills to earn high profits from a real estate sales department. Profit is a good indicator of skill. And it's interesting to note that franchises and marketing groups don't use the profits of large numbers of their business owners, not salespeople, business owners, as a way of attracting new members. You never hear a franchise or a marketing group say, "List with us, look at how much profit our people are making." They'll talk about everything else, but they won't talk about profit. So these groups talk about turnover, the power of the brand, the systems that they have, the marketing the franchise does, things like that, but never about the profits of their members. Another thing to think about is that groups that sell their names, they want as many offices as possible. The more offices they have, the more money they make. And over the years, we've heard agency owners complain that their networks have allowed another office to open in a neighbouring suburb. These principals have complained that often they lost business to the new agency because clients thought that they were listing with the established agency. And this can be a problem whenever you buy a name. If you're successful, others nearby may want the name, thinking that that's why you've been successful. Essentially, what you've done is you've helped sell the name to your opposition, and the opposition benefits from your work, and so too does the franchise or the marketing group. And when two offices in neighbouring service areas have the same name, how can clients tell you apart? So what's the best option for your business? Should you join or stay in a real estate franchise? Should you join or stay in a real estate marketing group? Should you be an independent real estate agency? The option you choose can greatly affect your profit, and it can affect the long-term saleability of your business as well. Let's look at franchises on page 12. What's the difference between a marketing group and a franchise? In effect, the answer is cost, although those trying to convince you to join them will almost certainly disagree. In marketing groups, you pay a flat monthly fee. With most franchises, you pay a percentage of your gross income, which usually makes belonging to a franchise a far more expensive exercise. Buying a franchise name can get very expensive, and unlike a mortgage that will eventually be paid out, this expense is ongoing. If you have four salespeople who each produce $300,000 in gross fees per annum, and this, by the way, is the bare minimum salespeople should be producing, this is $1.2 million in fee production from those salespeople. Add your own personal production, let's say another $300,000, and your agency's fee production is $1.5 million. If you pay a franchise 8% of your gross turnover in sales income, you pay $120,000 in franchise fees per year. Now, you might not think that $120,000 is a very big expense when you compare it to a turnover of $1.5 million, but always remember that turnover is not profit. You have expenses to pay. Typical real estate agencies, using typical industry reward systems for paying salespeople, struggle to achieve 10% gross profit on sales income. So a turnover of $1,500,000 reduces to $1,380,000 after the franchise fee is deducted. A 10% profit leaves $138,000 for the owner, while the franchise takes $120,000. The franchise received 46% of the net profit. So it's important to remember that turnover is not profit, and it's also important to remember that gross is different to the net. So 8% of the gross profit can turn into 46% of the net profit. So be very, very careful before you give people percentages of your gross income. Be very careful indeed. And so, yes, indeed, 8% of the gross is a lot more than 8% of the profit. Despite doing all the work, the owner of the business earned a mere $18,000 more than the franchise. But some franchises also charge a percentage of the rental income, so that adds to the cost of buying the name. Add the fact that many franchise agreements require the agency to sign over the ownership of the phone number to the franchise should the franchisee leave, and you have a lock-in contract that offers few benefits when weighed up against the cost. So be careful before you sign away 8% of your gross income, 8% of your rental income, and your telephone number. If you do decide to join a real estate franchise, never agree to signing over your telephone number and never agree to signing away 8% of your rental income. There will not be enough profit left if you do. On page 14, remember too that there may be marketing expenses the franchise expects you to pay. When you market a business that's part of a real estate franchise, your marketing dollars are spent promoting a name that you don't own. So should you leave, all of your marketing money is wasted because you promoted the franchise and not you. Would the $120,000 you paid the franchise, $10,000 per month, go a long way towards marketing your name as an independent real estate agency? You know it would. By the time you factor in 8% of the gross sales income, 8% of the rental fees, and loss of your agency's telephone number, it could be argued that you pay a lot for the name and that you should see a huge increase in your profit, not turnover, your profit, as a return on this massive investment. Franchise agreements have been refined over many decades, and from a legal standpoint, they could be argued as being bulletproof. So once you're in, you aren't going to find any legal loopholes to get you out. You usually sign up for 7 years, and the only way out is to wait for the day when the agreement expires. You could sell, but even that may be subject to your franchise agreement. We heard of an example where the owner of a franchised agency was trying to sell his business due to poor health. The buyer planned to buy the business and brand it as an independent agency once the franchise agreement expired. Contracts were exchanged between the parties. But when the franchise was informed, it told their franchisee that according to his agreement, he had to find a buyer who would agree to sign up for a new 7-year term with the franchise. So sell to a new franchisee, or no sale, he was told. The buyer refused to take on the franchise, and although contracts were exchanged, he kindly allowed the seller to rescind the contract without penalty. The agency stumbled along without a person who had the energy to run it. On page 15, let's talk about marketing groups. Now, when you join a marketing group, you pay a flat monthly fee. Now, there may be some other levies, such as group marketing levies, but mainly your fee is fixed. It costs less to belong to a real estate marketing group than it does to a franchise. Now, this doesn't mean that marketing groups are the best option, however. You get access to some training, you get group buying discounts, branded marketing, some business advice, and you have the freedom to leave with little notice. In my opinion, these groups are like a big club. You get the feeling of belonging, you can claim to be part of a national brand, you may receive network referrals, but whether this is worth the cost of losing your identity, it's something you should consider carefully. So let's talk about independent, being an independent agent. Before you're tempted to buy a name, consider the one you were given by your parents. It's the name on your birth certificate. It's a name you can use for free. Now, if you don't want to use your own name, you can choose another name, one that doesn't require you to pay 8% of your gross income to use. This is your third option, be independent. Now, does an independent agency have any hope of competing against these big names? We say yes. Let me ask you a question. What do you believe to be more important, your name or your reputation? When you belong to a large group, the bad operators have been known to give the good operators a bad name. Now, if an agency develops a respectable reputation within the community it serves, do you believe that this reputation was earned because of the franchise or because of the leader, the team, and the agency's culture? An agency is only as good as the people working in it. And if the team is doing such good work, why would the owner feel the need to hide behind somebody else's name, especially when you have to pay 8% of the gross income for the privilege? You can't buy respectability. An abort name for a business requires more than just that name to make the agency profitable. It requires well-trained winners working in the company to carry the message to clients and to prospective clients. It requires the agency to have profit management systems in place so that the agency makes large profits from the income generated by its salespeople without the principal having to list and sell. And by not having to list and sell, the agency owner is free to spend time hiring, developing salespeople, marketing the company. In other words, building a business instead of working in the business. But think about this. If you had this sort of business, would you feel the need to pay large amounts of money for somebody else's name? If you have a team of winners and if your agency is profitable, why do you need franchises and marketing groups, especially when your parents gave you a name for free? If you look at the main street of any suburb over a 10-year period, you'll see the real estate equivalent of musical chairs. Agency names change. The independent joins a franchise, another agency leaves its franchise and joins another, another agency picks up the name that the other office just abandoned. What are these business owners trying to do? Buy credibility? As respectable as some of these bought names are, do these agency owners think that a respectable name by itself will change their fortunes? Does anyone really believe that a respectable name will do your branding for you? That a name you buy will save your business or rocket it to new heights? Does anyone really believe that? Let's look at the legal requirements now on page 17. First of all, licensing requirements. You must be sure that you're legally able to operate an agency in your region. Each country, state and territory has different laws and you must obey the law. You can be certain that competitors will be watching you and will use any opportunity to report you for any breach, real or otherwise. Licensing regulations vary by region, but most follow this structure. First of all, a corporation license. The agency's trading company is usually required to be licensed. There can be requirements for one, several, or all of the company's directors to hold a real estate license. Licensee in charge. This person holds a full real estate license and is the effective officer in charge. The licensee is responsible for the conduct of the agency and is liable in the event of a legal breach. Salesperson's qualifications, and this includes property managers. In most regions, there's provision for a lower level qualification for a salesperson working under the supervision of a licensee in charge. The regulations for onboarding salespeople can be straightforward or complex depending on the region. The regulations are particularly onerous in New Zealand, South Australia, and to a lesser degree in Tasmania, for example. On page 18, you may also have to think about a development application. So if starting your agency from scratch, or if you plan extensive modifications to your new office, or if you're moving into a building and changing its current use, you may require a DA from your local council. You should also check with your local council over its sign policy. Now, some councils have strict regulations regarding for sale and for lease signboards. You should know the regulations, otherwise you may incur a heavy fine. Also, check the legalities of placing sandwich boards on the footpath outside your office. You're also going to need business registration. Your business name should be registered with the authorities, ASIC in Australia, to protect your ownership of the name and ensure that it's not already claimed. In Australia, you must have an ABN, an Australian business number, which you can obtain online. You're also going to need insurance. And please don't muck about with insurance. Make sure you are well and truly covered for all aspects of your business. Now, most licensing regulations require you to have PI, professional indemnity insurance. You should also take out general business insurance to cover public liability and your office fit out and its contents. Contact a good insurance broker. Usually you can arrange monthly premiums to spread the cost. Give some thought too to the bank accounts that you'll open. Pittard recommends at least 4 bank accounts. There's your general account, your general transaction account, a trust account, and make sure that you tell the bank that this is a trust account, a CESA account into which you set aside funds to cover your legal liabilities like GST, tax and superannuation, and an interest-bearing saver account for any spare cash. Employment requirements are on page 19, and this information on page 19 applies to Australian businesses. Before your first employee starts, you must arrange workers' compensation insurance. The providers vary from state to state. You must register with the tax office as an employer, which can be done when you get your ABN. You'll be required to deduct tax from your employee's wages. Your accounting software will do this for you and remit it to the tax office, usually quarterly. Employee superannuation must be paid every quarter to a super fund of the employee's choice. The easiest way is to use the tax office's small business superannuation clearinghouse. You also need to be aware of the marketing regulations in your region because they do vary. Australia and New Zealand have anti-spam legislation, for example. Small businesses in Australia are not obliged to have a privacy policy, but it is illegal to door knock on Sundays and after 6 p.m. every day. Know what you can and what you can't do. You should check the appropriate government agencies in your region for registration and licensing requirements for the corporation, licensee in charge, salespeople and property managers. The thing we must always do is know the law and make sure that we always obey it. And that brings us to the end of part one of how to open your own profitable real estate agency. Go and have a bit of a break and come back for part two. Talk to you then.